welcome to the first three legs fourwheels.com podcast. My name's Paul and I'm here with...
Oh, I'm Chris.
I'm Lee.
So we've got quite a few things to go through before the start of this year's F1 season, which of course is this weekend, starting in Australia. And, well, what's come out of testing first?
Well, I think the obvious thing from testing all three sessions is the Mercedes have been the fastest, haven't they? Let's be honest, they've been way out front. They've put in faster times, even on slower tyres. Mm-hmm. But I mean, how much of that is Mercedes' advancement and all the other teams not catching them in testing?
It's the consistency of reliability that's scary about Mercedes, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they turned up and what was that, 157 laps on day one.
Do you know the crazy thing? Fair enough, they've replaced parts and stuff like that. One engine they've used.
For both drivers?
Both drivers, all test, one engine.
So basically they picked up where they left off last season.
And run with it.
So I think that about covers the predictions for who's going to win everything this season then. So this was a very short podcast.
Hope you've enjoyed 2015.
We'll see you next year.
Who are you picking between drivers?
I think it's going to be tight. Lewis has obviously got the advantage. He's coming into this season as reigning world champion, but Rosberg's going to want to go one step further than he did last year.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's going to be close. I think it's going to come down to less than the points for one race win and no double points this year, which makes it even better. So yeah, it's going to be one of them, but it's going to be less than 25 points.
It'll go one way or the other. It's either going to go at the last race, or I think Lewis will wrap it up halfway through the season. I can't. I can't see Rosberg running away with the championship like I could see Lewis doing it.
Yeah, despite the fact that, as you rightfully pointed out in our conversation earlier, that Rosberg's faster over single laps and race distances in testing. He's looked at certain things of his game, hasn't he? He's tried to work out where he's been slower, where he's been down a little bit. And he's tried to pick up the pace and catch Lewis. And he's done more than caught Lewis. He's faster than him in testing, which was surprising to most people. But I mean, he out-qualified Lewis. Don't forget that, last season. But
I think that's what surprised everybody last year. I had Lewis down as being quicker than anybody on that circuit over one lap.
Yeah, any circuit over one lap. One lap, I'd probably say one lap qualifying, you're looking at Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton as your three fastest drivers.
I think Kimi's got a an honourable mention in that.
But he's got to have the car underneath him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Arguably you could say that about Sebastian.
You could as well, yeah. And any driver, in fact. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an interesting one this year with this being Vettel's first year away from Red Bull.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, he's at Ferrari now, isn't he? So, teamed up with Kimi, who's obviously they're good mates outside the team, to the point where Sebastian has actually impersonated Kimi on stage whilst collecting his World Drivers' Championship award. You know, you don't get away with that with people you're not friends with, really, do you? Let's be honest. But if the same thing happens to Sebastian at Ferrari that happened to him last year at Red Bull, as in he gets outdone by his teammate, I think it's going to severely damage his reputation, because it will look as though it will look stronger for the people who always said it was the car to have their standpoint on the argument.
I think he's going to have his hands full this year with a hungry Kimi that's happy with the car. Vettel's going to have to try and bed himself in with, you know, look at the difference between the Red Bull steering wheel, which has always been quite minimalist, to Ferrari. Just things like that are good. That's got to take you at least half a season to get your head around that sort of thing.
I mean, they can do a lot of work with things like that in the simulator, mm-hmm. but how close a simulation is it going to be to the real thing? Because you're not going to have the same pressures in a simulator as you actually are on track.
Literally.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to look at the, you know, similar to Mercedes, Kimi was faster than Vettel across testing. Mm-hmm. So you've got to look at that as well. But are Ferrari closer to Mercedes than anyone else Because it looks as though in testing Williams might be pretty close.
That is true, actually. I mean, Williams are definitely... They're on the up again. They've had a few seasons where they haven't been at the best. They're not where they used to be, 80s and 90s, but I don't think they're not far off catching... Well, catching being close to Mercedes, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, it looks as though they've got a pretty good aero package, but it's not just the aero package, is it, with Mercedes? It's the entire thing, the whole thing that they put together.
Yeah.
They had such a huge advantage in 2014. They've had these development tokens as use of the engine that they've basically advanced themselves. They've kept the gap. It appears to me that they've kept the gap of whatever they had at the end of last season. There's still that gap at the beginning of this season.
Mm.
Only time will tell, of course, when we get to the race this weekend, but that's what it appears to be to me.
Well, between the engine manufacturers that they're up against, being Renault and Ferrari, it looks to be only Ferrari which has made a real step forward in performance.
Yeah, I think the Renault engine, they've gone backwards. It's not quite to the same extent when Renault stopped putting the badges on them and they became mechachrome. Not that much of a downgrade, but I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again from an engine manufacturer.
The thing with Renault is, do you think there's possibly a... I understand that now, in the new series of Turbo Euro Formula 1, it's more of an engine formula than it used to be.
Yeah.
But do you think there's a case to say that Renault relied on the fact that they were sticking their engine in a Red Bull, which had easily the best aero package and was winning races because of the aero package? Because even through Sebastian's championship wins, they were still usually slower in a straight line, but they made it up through the twisty parts of circuits.
I think you could say that about any engine manufacturer that put their engine in the back of a newly designed car, because when he was at McLaren, they were unstoppable back in the days of Hakkinen.
Yeah, but they were also quicker in a straight line most of the time, weren't they?
Well, yes, but they had the Ilmor engine. I think the cat's got an opinion on that.
He's a massive Mercedes fan.
Yeah, I think the Red Bull car flattered the Renault engine a little bit towards the end of the V8 era. It wasn't the most powerful. But as you said, it was a whole package, wasn't it, of Red Bull? It was the dominant car. But they didn't sort themselves out for the start of the V6 turbo era, the beginning of 2014. Didn't build the best engine. Anyone who wasn't Red Bull really struggled. And I've got to say, I think it was a newly designed car that was the only strong point for Renault last year. Because... let's not forget, Daniel Ricciardo was the only non-Mercedes driver to win races last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, he did it in a Red Bull Renault. So again, I think Red Bull flattered the engine last year, despite how poor it was. When you look at the problems that Lotus had with it, to the point where they've even ditched the company completely and have gone to Mercedes this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Lotus were, of course, the Renault Works team at one point, and
yeah.
I think they actually had an option to continue with Renault this year, but the performance out of the engine relative to the car was that bad that they were the ones that chose to walk away.
Well, Red Bull tried to get Mercedes engines, didn't they? And Mercedes basically said there's not a chance we want our engine in that car.
Mm. I mean, a Red Bull with a Mercedes engine would have been that would have been a frightening prospect.
Yeah,
I think it would have been exciting. I think it would have been as quick as Mercedes.
Quite possibly. Also interesting to see what their two drivers do this year. We know what Danny Ricciardo can do, blindingly quick,
mm-hmm.
In qualifying and in race trim.
Yeah.
We got the call in the Bahrain GP last year when, got the radio straight away, Vettel's too slow, move him out of my way, he's slowing me down. When you're supposed to be the new boy and sit back and do what you're told, he certainly didn't, and he was definitely the number one driver at Red Bull last year. And Danny Kvyat, a bit of an unknown quantity coming up from Toro Rosso, but hopefully he can do the job for them. But if he can't, I don't see him staying there any longer than a season, really.
It's just a shame they didn't go with Werner, I still think, because I think he would have been the better choice. And keep Kvyat in Toro Rosso for another season.
Yeah.
But
Red Bull, do you think the problem is that they had two drivers that they wanted to get into the junior team that they wanted in there because they've got another two drivers behind those that they want to get in there as well?
But the drivers in the junior team are only 12 years old. What have they got?
That's why it's a junior team.
Pit the even
team.
Younger, pit the glint in the milkman's eye.
Well, that's it, you know, and after you've
thank
got
you, Ryan Atkinson.
Sights of Verstappen there at the moment, haven't you, for this season? They are very young. But you also got Alex Lynn and Antonio Felix da Costa as well, who are coming through, and they're going to be knocking on the door at the end of the season.
It's a shame for Lynn. The guy's 20 years old. He's ready. He's ready for his go. Him.
I think, as far as Toro Rosso are concerned, he's now past it.
Well, yeah.
Pension him off. Send him to America to turn left.
Quick note on Danny Ric though is you talk about he's quick and his race pace and stuff like that, but his race pace must be tremendous, because he's missing, you know, for the first half of a race. Then as soon as the pit stops have gone, and all of a sudden you're getting towards the end of the race, you're like, oh, shit, he's third.
Yeah, I think he knows how to play the advantage. He knows when he's not going to be quick, and he doesn't try and make up time and eventually lose time where he's not going to be fast. He knows that he can probably make up time when other people are in their pit stops.
Yeah.
He knows that he's got to be strong around that, you know, around the changing of the stints. He's normally pretty good in middle stints and final stints. I mean, first stints, yeah.
Pretty good racing driver, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He knows
fast,
what...
Fast and tactical.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, anybody who saw his lap on Top Gear a couple of weeks ago will just know that, you know, put him in the same car as anybody else, and he's very, very fast. So... Yeah, I mean, Ricciardo, I think, is going to be the one to watch at Red Bull.
We have we are joined by the pit lane cat, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, we are.
I think with Ricciardo, he reminds me a little bit, as a massive Jenson Button fan, he reminds me of Jenson Button when he was in BAR. No, he was constantly putting his BAR in positions in qualifying where they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, look at the...
He's got that same sort of out-and-out core race performance.
Yeah, rewind a year, look at the Australian Grand Prix last year. Red Bull was supposed to be nowhere. They had a terrible test beginning of last year. And then he finished, what was it? Did he finish second or third? I can't remember.
Second.
Finished second, but then they took it away from him, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, which was disgusting, really, because... It didn't really make that much difference at the end of the day.
It didn't, but rules are there for reasons.
They are, yeah.
If it would have been a Mercedes that had done it and that had swung the championship for one of the drivers...
Yeah, we'd still be talking about it now.
Yeah, if it had been a Ferrari that had done it at the time,
it wouldn't have been mentioned.
No, if it was somebody vaguely related to Michael Schumacher, no action would have been taken. Sorry, sued.
there is no bias in Formula One. It is a completely level playing ground.
Just some teams are more equal than others.
Yeah, vertical's level, isn't it?
Vertical's level, yeah.
McLaren.
Oh, what can you say about McLaren this season?
Not many good things.
Apart from where do you start and... Who's going to start, and when will they start, and how long will they go for?
It looks like they're starting this season with the same lineup they finished last season with, and if you put a bet on that at some point last year, I think the odds would have been extremely long. But it looks as though the due to Fernando's extremely strange accident in testing, that Kevin Magnussen's going to take the seat in Australia alongside Jenson Button after being unceremoniously forced out to allow Alonso to come in with the new Honda era.
It's a weird one. The car has been a dog all through testing.
Yeah. The engine has been a dog all through testing.
We are giving dogs a bad name here.
Even when it's... Well, it hasn't worked, but even when they've managed to get a couple of laps out of it, it's been 3 seconds off the pace.
Yeah. Well, what was it Jensen got? 4 installation laps at one point, and that was it.
That was the last test, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The last test, yeah.
Yeah. No, nothing seems to work. Alonso's crash, you could fill a website with conspiracy theories on what happened there. Was he conscious when he hit the wall? Had he had an electric shock? Has he got some kind of medical condition? What do we hear from Ron Dennis? Everything is fine. He's just in hospital as a standard procedure. Yeah,
just likes the porridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is he contractually... Is there something in his contract somewhere that says, you know, performance of the car, I'm not driving it until it's up to a certain standard?
I'd be surprised if that's in the contract, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's used... It's such a hard thing to say because it's so ridiculous to even think that a driver like Fernando Alonso wouldn't want to drive. We're talking about the guy that wasn't happy at McLaren and went back to the dog of a Renault and spent a whole year in it.
Yes.
So it's ridiculous to say that he wouldn't want to drive it, but
then again, McLaren have had a problem before where Mansell couldn't drive the car because it was too narrow for him to get in.
Well, he actually said it was dangerous, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah,
he believed it was a dangerous car. It was 95, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yes. While.
And McLaren used one of four drivers in one season.
Didn't we have Brundle and Blundell in the same team at that point?
At one point, yeah.
Brundle, Blundell, Mansell, and was it Jan Magnussen, Kevin's dad?
Yes, he did
his first race for them, didn't
he? Yes, that's right, yeah.
Before he went to Stewart.
Yes.
I've got an interesting thing about Fernando's accident, though, because apparently when he woke up in hospital, the stories you believe, he thought it was 1995, strangely enough. Yeah. But he thought it was 1995.
Right.
Now, he thought he'd had a karting accident. Can you imagine how over the moon he was when someone told him he was a double Formula One world champion?
Oh, quick, I need to remember this.
We've obviously not heard the full story about what's happened, and to be honest...
Yes, we have. We've heard seven of them.
I don't think we've heard 100% of the truth of the full story. What was it the Manic Street Preacher said? This is my truth, now tell me yours.
Yeah.
We've heard some stories that... The 100% facts may or may not be in there, and to be honest, I don't think we're going to find out until all the autobiographies come out in about 15 years' time.
No, but the bottom line is McLaren are well off the pace. The start of their Honda era is not going to plan. Again, the proof is in the pudding. We'll see at the race, but I don't think we're going to see McLaren at anywhere near a point-scoring position.
No.
For the first half of the season.
Will they finish the race in Australia?
No.
I don't think they'll finish the race.
Jensen might finish the race.
No, I just don't think the car will.
Fair enough.
The fact that they've broke down every time. They haven't done a whole race distance.
No.
Although in one go.
Red Bull hadn't done a whole race distance and then finished second in last year's Australian Grand Prix, as I mentioned before.
But Red Bull didn't have half the problems that McLaren have had.
No, you're quite right.
Saying that, though, they probably didn't have half the money that Honda will be tipping into this right now to try and fix the problems.
What I don't understand with Honda is they redesign something every time something goes wrong and they have to wait 4 days for it to actually arrive.
Yeah.
Why don't they just fix it?
Well, is redesigning it fixing it? I mean, obviously, if it doesn't work, it's not fixing it. You've got a whole different problem with a different part. But
so, what happens if something goes wrong on Friday?
They're knackered till Malaysia.
Well, what I find confusing about all this, I know we're going to have to talk about something else that isn't McLaren for a minute soon. They had a whole year. With obviously there was Honda guys sniffing around the McLaren factory and during the races over last year, you know, they must have gathered so much information from Mercedes. They not only that, they had a benchmark. They could have used Mercedes as a benchmark. So, well, that's what we need to work to. No other teams, Ferrari and Renault, didn't have benchmarks. Well, Mercedes didn't have a benchmark. They just knew. They thought they'd built a pretty good engine. How can you have that much information there and seem to do precisely nothing with it?
Good question. Something somewhere has gone wrong. There's been a lack of communication somewhere between McLaren and Honda.
Mm-hmm.
Honda thought they had the abilities to match and surpass Mercedes, and they've come down to earth with a bump and found they haven't.
Yeah.
I think the real shame is that for once, the McLaren looks like a semi-decent car.
Yeah.
You know, just chassis-wise.
Well, I'd just like to point out, Jenson Button has a second job with McLaren this year as translator for some of the people in Honda who don't speak English, and for some of the people at McLaren who don't speak Japanese.
Really?
Yes. He has had to do some translating.
Do you think that's what swung it?
Possibly, yeah. That's probably possibly what Ron, by the way, I speak Japanese. Congratulations to Jenson, by the way, and Jessica for getting married. So Toro Rosso, the two young drivers, Carlos Sainz Jr., who has claimed doesn't want to be known as Junior because his dad was never in Formula One, and Max Verstappen, obviously the son of Jos Verstappen, who drove in the 90s and possibly early 2000s, did he?
Could have done a sometimes finished races as well.
Sometimes finished races. Very good at catching fire in the pit lane.
Yes. Mm.
Did he retire at that point? Did he carry on?
I don't think he had much choice. I think they actually retired the car.
Yeah, I think they retired, actually, thinking about it. He got out of the car and stood there and looked at it.
And then Benetton went and hid the refuelling rig because they'd taken the regulator out, but...
Oops. Naughty Benetton. It was never like them to break the rules in the 90s, was it? But Max Verstappen's too young to remember that, only being 17, which means he was born in 1998?
Yes. That's awful.
Is he too young for Formula One?
We're going to find out in about a week.
Well, yeah. The thing is, if he's not sort of acclimatised himself to the time in Australia, it's definitely going to be past his bedtime when they have the first qualifying session, let alone the race.
Yeah, probably. I've seen an interview with Carlos Sainz Jr. He comes across very well. He seems very relaxed, seems quite at home in the team, doesn't appear to be daunted by the Formula One task at all. So Toro Rosso obviously think that these two are ready for Formula One, but I mean they are a pair of very young drivers, and they've got younger. Well, they've got older drivers waiting in the wings behind these two, haven't they?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I just think Sainz may be old enough, but Verstappen at 17. I mean, the FIA have now changed the super license regulations to make sure that. Nobody that young can come through again because you've got to have amassed a certain amount of experience in junior formula and single seater series.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, at that kind of age, you're not going to have.
It does make a joke of having super licences.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially as Verstappen, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's only done one season in single seater cars, out of carts.
And did he win it?
I don't know if he won it. He was a European Formula 3.
Yeah.
It's the only single-seater season that he's done outside of karting.
I mean, remember 15 years ago when Button was about to have his first season and everyone said he was too young at 20?
Yeah, that's it.
So now they're getting a 17-year-old in. It just seems to me like he's not going to have anywhere close to enough experience. Okay, he may have been racing cars since he was out of nappies, but you can't really compare the two.
No, you can't. I mean, he had a fairly impressive test in Interlagos when I think he did the first test in Interlagos at the end of last year.
But driving a car on your own around a track fast, that's what racing drivers are supposed to do.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be driving and getting in a car and making it go forwards. That's going to be the issue with him.
No, I mean, and is the car up to a standard where, you know, if anything goes wrong or if anything is not what he's used to, if anything outside of his comfort zone happens, is he able to react, not react quickly enough, but is he able to react in the correct manner?
Can he handle the pressure? I think that's the best way to describe it.
Whereas we know for a fact that Jenson Button, very experienced driver, I think the most experienced driver now on the grid, when something goes wrong with Jenson's car, as it inevitably will this season, we've already spoken about that, he won't panic. He'll get on the radio and say, guys, this doesn't feel right, and McLaren will get back to him with, okay Jenson, we're looking into it, and he just does what he can. If this happens to Max and he panics because he's not used to this kind of situation and scenario, and he pulls off the track in the wrong place, or he you know, it's a real question of Red Bull and Toro Rosso's faith in their younger drivers. They have to get it right.
Disposability of their junior team.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The disposability of the junior team.
But the thing I think about it is, if you look back at Silverstone last year, where Kimi went off, you know, quite strangely, and went into the barriers, and just after he'd gone off, and as he was in the middle of his accident,
when he came back to the circuit,
yeah, Felipe Massa behind that car, and because he was an experienced Formula One driver that knew what was going on, he spun his car and went back end first,
yeah,
into Kimi. You can't tell me that if that would have been a 17-year-old driver that's never had any like real experience in like real single seater cars, that he would react the same way.
I think the first thing that anyone would do in that situation is try and swerve around it.
And that would create a new accident.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the thing. It's knowing what to do in certain situations. But everybody's got to learn from somewhere.
Yeah.
He might end up being a really good driver, and should Kvyat not be successful at Red Bull this season, and they decide to stick with their policy of picking younger drivers, we may see Verstappen in a Red Bull in 2016, 2017.
There's two things that can happen here. Two things. He can either be... he's either going to struggle, or... He'll end up being a genius.
Yeah, let's hope they've made the right decision.
It's gonna be interesting to watch, definitely. So moving on, Sauber, nightmare 2014,
mm-hmm. Terrible, worst season in history,
almost a team ending.
Yeah,
yeah. And before this season even starts, they've got a court case.
It's not all looking terrible for them. They have bought in, at the moment, two drivers who bring in a fair amount of money with them. Felipe Nasr, or Nasser, however you want to say it. Just don't get him confused with the other Brazilian, Felipe Massa.
Felipe to Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. he's brought in Banco do Brasil, which means Sauber have changed their livery completely. They're now a blue and yellow coloured car.
They look like the old 14 Pacific cars from the mid-90s.
Yes, they do. Let's just hope they're not as slow as them. And at the moment, they've got Marcus Ericsson in the other seat, who brings in a lot of sponsorship money from Sweden. And he proved in the second half of the season last year, even in a Caterham, that he was more than capable of being a fast racing driver. But there's another ex-Caterham driver waiting in the wings, mm-hmm. in Guido van der Garde. Mm. Now, what's happening there? The court case happening on Thursday?
Wednesday. Basically, what's happening is van der Garde is taking Sauber to court, claiming that he had a guaranteed drive with them this season because he was last season's number three driver. He says that they've reneged on that, and he is taking them to court to effectively get his race seat. I can't see what good it'll do him, because if they get forced to put him in the car, then they are going to give absolutely zero effort to him.
Yeah, it's another Nelson Piquet Jr. thing, isn't it? You know, sort of after he squealed on the Alonso gate.
Yeah,
thing
I think it's going to be worse than that, and I'm going for a real... I'm dredging one up from the real dark, distant history.
Go on.
Andrea Moda.
Andrea Moda, that's a name I haven't heard in many years.
I don't know who that is.
Now, Andrea Moda were a team that were owned by an Italian shoe millionaire. That means he made his millions from shoes, not that he had millions of shoes.
Are you now going to tell me that he gave a driver the boot and he wasn't allowed?
Well, the driver that he gave the boot ended up as the original Stig in Top Gear.
Oh, did he?
They had two drivers, and the name of the second one escapes me. But they put all their efforts into one driver and ended up being banned by the FIA for only concentrating on one car. When they were pulling stunts like sending... I can't remember the Stig's name now. I keep thinking Ben Collins, but that was the second one.
Perry McCarthy.
He was basically treated... he wasn't treated by them at all. They'd do things like send him out with 20 seconds of a qualifying session remaining.
And with wet tyres.
With wet tyres on a dry track.
Yeah.
Or with high downforce wings at Monza.
Yeah.
Things like that. They did everything in their power to do less than the bare minimum to actually get him into the race, because they couldn't afford to run two cars. So they put all their efforts into the car with their favoured driver, who I'm going to have to look up now because it's going to bug me.
Yeah, but I mean, Andrea Moda, they were in the era where you had, I think it was something like 30-something drivers all vying for qualifying positions, and you found out right about... After the first practice, you found out there were only going to be 26 of you, and if you have 32 drivers there were 6 of you who weren't going to make it onto the track.
Alex Caffey. Alex Caffey was the other driver. Incidentally, Roberto Moreno also was a member of that team, and, well, he did really well, didn't he?
He was all right. He came back to Formula One.
Oh, it was Roberto Moreno that they concentrated on. Alex Caffey only took part in the first Grand Prix of the 92 season, and they actually got excluded.
I have no idea about any of this.
But
I'll have to start listening to this podcast.
Getting back on now rather than 1992, if Sauber are forced to take Van der Garde on as a driver, is that what's going to happen to him?
Yeah.
Are Sauber just going to completely disregard him?
Unlikely, if they're going to be banned by the FIA for doing such a...
It is unlikely, and I think the thing is that they've got such a... Such troubles at the minute that.
But whatever happens on Wednesday, I think Sauber are going to race with the two drivers that they've got at the moment, purely and simply because if the ruling goes against them, there's always the Court of Arbitration for Sport to fall back on, and they're going to appeal.
Yeah,
it's not going to be final and it's not going to be definite, because every sporting court case always goes to an appeal.
And we've had Manisha Kaltenborn saying, as Ted Kravitz has actually interviewed it, saying that those will be the two drivers in the car, Felipe Nasr and Marcus Ericsson. She hasn't said that it will be anybody else.
I just wonder if, but after the court case and the appeal gets found in Van der Garde's favour, how are they going to pay him a lot of money to make him go away? Because they don't have the money.
Yeah. But Van der Garde must have a case, because the court wouldn't have heard it. They would have laughed it off if there was nothing to it. Yeah. But they must have looked at this and thought, he's actually got a case, we need to hear this. Mm-hmm. Which is why it's being heard in Melbourne this Wednesday, so that if he gets his race, he sits in the car on Friday for first practice.
The other thing, of course, is... if it goes against him, he's in Melbourne, and there's a team yet with him to drive up.
There is something to think about this, though. He's freakishly tall, and that might be quite awkward to stick him into a car just, you know, straight away. When you look at the size of Marussia drivers in the past, they, like, Chilton was a tiny guy, Jules Bianchi was a tiny guy. To try and then stick a 6-foot guy, and that might be quite difficult for them.
Yeah.
But the other problem I've got with this, because I quite like Udo, I think he always comes across as being a really nice guy, and he seemed to do quite a lot of work for Sauber last year as well. You know.
Yeah, he had a frustrating season at Caterham, didn't he? The year that he was racing alongside Charles Peake.
But the problem for him is, if he takes a team to court to try and force them to have him in the car, regardless of whether he's got a case or not, who's going to want him after that?
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. It's like another Nelson Piquet Jr. thing. You know, Nelson Piquet Jr. had potential to be in Formula One for quite a few years, but as soon as he squealed on his team and then took them to court, and you know, he lost the trust of not just his team but everyone in Formula One. And I think it was quite clear from that point on that he was never going to be allowed back to Formula One. It'd be a shame to see the same thing happen to Guido.
I actually feel a bit sorry for Piquet in that situation. I know we're talking about 2015, really, and we shouldn't be going on about things like this.
But oh, why not? It's fun.
The
rose-tinted glasses.
He was such a full guy for that.
He was, yeah. But
Alonso managed to come away with that awful well. You know, nobody really threw anything towards him.
In the same way that Alonso managed to come out well out of Spygate as well.
Yeah, and everything else that Alonso comes out really well of, apart from a McLaren.
There's an amazing T-shirt with every team of Fernando has been in that's involved some sort of controversy. So it's got like Spygate, Crashgate, and blah blah blah, and underneath it's Fernando Alonso, a man of many gates.
Yeah, I mean, positive news for Sauber, though. They've been quite quick in testing. They've not been right at the back of the pack as they were in race trim in 2014.
Question is for Sauber this year. Quick straw poll. Are they going to score points?
Yes.
Yes.
That's three yeses. Yeah. They're through.
Yeah. Well, when you look at it, they've completed the second most laps over testing.
Yeah. Last year it was reliability that was the big issue.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see an improvement. I've always had a soft spot for the Sauber team because they were a privateer team. Then they went to the factory BMW team. Then Peter Sauber got them back. Shame about the Chelsea connection, but you can't have it always around. But they are a privateer team that actually can build a car. Unlike Manarusha, whatever they're going to be called.
Manarusha.
That sounds like a really bad 70s disco hit.
Well, I don't know how they can still use the name Marussia or Marussia, however you wanted to pronounce it, because
sticking to their S in it.
Well, it is, but the financial backers who gave them the name are no longer there. There's a completely new owner of the team. John Booth is still there, who was the man at the top. Graham Loudon, who's the man who puts his face forward for the media and runs a lot of the team, he's still there as well.
Yeah.
So the top echelons of the team, who have been there right since it was Manor Formula 3 team way back in the 90s.
Built in a shed in Sheffield.
Built in a shed in Sheffield, which is where they are now.
Named after, I think, possibly very close to what has been called the roughest council estate in South Yorkshire.
Really?
Yes, the Manor estate in Sheffield is notorious. I'm surprised it hasn't had a Channel 4 documentary about it yet.
Well, it probably has, but they stole the tapes before they got back to back to the studio. But the Manor Marussia, who I'm sure by the time it gets to the first race they will have just entered as Manor. I think this whole Manor Marussia thing is just to so people know who they are. And they signed Will Stevens, who was at Caterham for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Performed quite well, actually. He was 7 seconds off the pace in the first practice. He got closer and closer, and then in the race, you may remember he actually held up Fernando Alonso on the straight. Yeah. And
to the
point where Alonso had to get on the radio and ask, "Who is this guy?"
I thought it was Felipe he held up.
No, it was Fernando.
It's the new boy.
It's the new boy. Yeah. So he's Will Stevens' potential there. He's came through the Caterham Academy, and unfortunately, Caterham are no more. That's been confirmed.
Saw the auction on Twitter.
Yes, a lot of it went for some stupid money, some of it went for not very much at all.
Yes, unfortunately everything I wanted to bid on was the stuff that was going for the stupid money.
Yes,
old cars.
I just wanted a steering wheel.
Wow. Don't start low. I'd have settled for a wing nut.
But we know Max Chilton's not going to be the other driver at Manor because he signed up for, is it Nissan he signed for in the endurance?
No, he's actually still competing in the last race of last year.
Oh, he's still there.
He's still going round.
Yeah. He's still in Russia. The last race that Marussia actually appeared in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, any race with Max Chilton's an endurance race.
I
think he'll do really well.
I hope so, because as much as I like to cheer the Brits on in Formula 1, Max Chilton, I don't think it was Formula 1's a sport for him. I think he's better off in something else.
Well, no one really looks at how many times you lapped in endurance racing. So
that's true. But what's going to finish first? The checkered flag dropping for time, or his first lap,
or his dad put money into the team?
No, oh, that'll be it.
At least Tom knows where his brother Tom knows where his talents lie. He knows he's a good touring car driver, so he sticks at that.
Yeah.
But now it'd be interesting to see who takes the second seat at Manor. Guido van der Garde is a possibility. Who else is available and ready to go? Roberto Meri did a couple of tests, didn't he, towards the end of Marussia's reign in 2014. Yeah.
I thought about Jean-Eric Verne as well, maybe to go into that team. But then I thought to myself, well, why would you do it if you were Jean-Eric Verne? Why would you leave Formula E? Because I take it he's if any of the races clash or he can't compete because of Formula One commitments, why would you leave a series, which is pretty cool, where you can win races.
Yeah, I mean, he went straight in his first weekend.
Yeah, yeah, he's in, and he's one of the top guys in that sport now. Why would he leave that to come back to Formula One just to be in Formula One, but last?
His current employers as well. He is a development driver. I don't believe he's a test driver. He's a development driver at Ferrari.
Yeah.
So Ferrari with the connection may be part of the deal, as I think you mentioned earlier. Esteban Gutierrez, who is the test driver at Ferrari, may be talked into that seat.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a case of Manor knocking on all the garage doors come Thursday morning, saying, "Can we borrow a driver?" And it'll be the first team to say, "Yes, we've got one here."
Jolyon Palmer, we know he's got the money behind him.
And his father.
He's a test driver at Lotus, isn't he? Is he this season?
Yeah,
Lotus.
Yes.
So it's a possibility there he could step into the seat. But it does mean seeing a lot more Jonathan Palmer on television, which is never a good thing.
It's not, but I like Jolyon. He's good. He seems like a good guy. And he's quick. He's a good racing driver.
He's quick. He's good. Will Lotus let him go? That's the question. If Manor want to get press out of this, Susie Wolf would be an obvious choice.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to have a set second driver until we get to Europe. And I think we're going to see a lot of different people pass through the second seat. But if Manor want to make some headlines...
Selling the seat.
Sell the seat.
Yeah.
Or offer the seat to test drivers if they get the permission of their teams... And we could yet see Susie Wolf in a Grand Prix before she's tested for Williams this season.
I don't think Williams would let her go to it, because I think she fills a role for Williams. And even over the course of race weekends...
Yeah, there's never a race weekend goes by without a zoom into the back of the garage at what Susie Wolf's thinking, is
no.
there?
No, that's true.
So, you know, she, everybody knows who Susie Wolf is. She's probably one of the most well-known development drivers. But I don't think there's a tie between Williams and Manor. They don't use the same engines. As far as I know, there's nothing linking them.
Just they're both British teams.
Stoffel Van Dorn would be a good shout, but I think he's already committed to another season in GP2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a question of who's in Australia this weekend and who can they get.
To be fair, though,
Mark Webber.
Yeah. Truth.
I would love it if Mark Webber turned up in a Manor Formula One suit.
Yeah, all right, mate, I'll give it a go.
Yeah. Why not?
I miss Webber. I miss him so much. He was good.
So moving on, who haven't we looked at yet? Force India.
What were they thinking over the winter? Not, you know, doing their tests in their 2014 car, potentially selling the first test, which they never even turned up to. Sounds as though they might have more money problems than they're letting on. They only got their 2015 car out. Was it the last day of testing or the last 2 days of testing?
Last two days.
It went well, though. It did go well. It went well.
They got more laps in than McLaren.
Yes.
Yeah.
So did I.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, anyone can get more miles in than McLaren. I think Stephen Hawking's probably got more miles in than McLaren in the winter. But yeah, Force India were the bottom of the Mercedes teams narrowly to McLaren last year. They'll want to change that. They, you're right there.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Good.
Yeah, nothing serious.
Good. I hope that's good to hear.
At this rate, we might be looking for another driver.
Not been driving a McLaren, have you?
No, I'm still conscious.
It's not 1995, by the way. But Force India, I'm not quite sure what they're thinking. There's a saying in the sport, which is, if you stand still, you go backwards. I've a funny feeling Force India might be standing still.
Yeah.
And they had a few good performances earlier on in 2014. Bahrain was another one, going back to the Bahrain GP again. After the safety car restart, there was the two Mercedes obviously vanished into the distance, but the only cars who were ahead of the rest of the pack were the two Force Indias.
Yeah.
And they managed to have quite... Everybody remembers the Hamilton-Rosberg battle from Bahrain, but those two, Perez and Hülkenberg, had a brilliant battle behind them,
yeah,
which was not concentrated on purely because of what was happening up front.
I think the problem with Force India, though, is development more or less stopped towards the end of last season, and it obviously didn't start on the new car.
No.
They're going to be a complete unknown quantity just because of the lack of track time that they've had. Okay, they've shown reliability, but that's 2 days out of one test. Can they come up with something that's effectively going to have to be quick out of the box?
I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things, isn't it, with teams will always say they would rather have a fast, unreliable car and make a fast car reliable than get a reliable car
that's slow.
This might be where Salva end up, actually, as well. Try and make a reliable car fast is a lot more difficult
than trying to make a fast car reliable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Which brings us on beautifully to Lotus.
Oh.
Fast car, not really. Reliable, definitely not.
I think it's going to be fast this year.
This year.
Quality driver lineup?
Yeah. Check. Romain Grosjean appears to have grown up quite a bit after his, I don't know what you want to call it, kamikaze starts of a couple of years ago.
Or is he just simply in a position where he's not been fast enough to cause issues?
Maybe that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, he had terrible problems with last year's Lotus, as did everyone who encountered the Lotus last year.
Mm-hmm.
Including Esteban Gutierrez, who went upside down at one point in a collision with a Lotus.
That moves us on to Pasto Red Shells Maldonado.
Yeah, that's it. They do Pasto Red Shells, don't they? I've seen them in Tesco's.
There's a meme in there, isn't there?
There is. Yeah, he's the only one who plays Mario Kart out of the other drivers on the grid.
He's the only one who plays Mario Kart in the simulator.
But you know what? He's quick over a single lap. He is fast, and I think the new Mercedes. Yeah, he's a race winner.
Yeah.
And he with new Mercedes, the engine and the package that Lotus have got, they gave up on that car last year very early on. They knew it wasn't going to work, and they started work on 2015's car.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to work in their favour. Not quite sure they'll be back where they were when Kimi was driving for them, with a potential to win a race. But I don't think they'll be far off. I think
it'll be interesting to see if. I mean, that team could build a Formula One car.
I think podiums is what they're aiming for this year.
But they clearly missed Ellison last year. And I hope they've got somebody else in there that can fill his role. But all I can think is the further up the grid that Lotus are, is the more potential they've got to come into contact with other cars.
It's going to be a question of, if the car's fast, are the drivers going to be able to keep their heads?
Yep.
Because their reputation precedes them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to watch.
The whole thing's going to be interesting.
In a good way or a bad way. It could be some thrilling racing. It could be a complete car crash. See what I did there?
Yeah. I do see what you did there, absolutely. I mean, it all boils down to what happens on Sunday. Well, not necessarily on Sunday. I mean, there's an awful lot that can happen on Saturday as well.
Is there going to be a Lotus on the grid, or is there going to be a Lotus in the barrier?
Yeah, cars catch fire quite often in the first race of the season. People don't realise that cars can break down on a Saturday. It's normally unexpected as well. It could be that despite their reliability, Mercedes might have problems on a Saturday and might find themselves way down the grid on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Behind the manor, who knows?
I've got a funny feeling about Mercedes. I think only one of those cars is going to finish that race.
It's possible. I mean, it happened last year, didn't it? Yeah. And it was all because of a €1 spark plug casing.
Yeah. I mean, and it's the first race of the season, so it is literally a case of anything could happen. And I'm not even discounting the fact that we get the entire grid starting from the pit lane.
Which could happen.
Which could well happen. Talking of which, let's look at what we think is going to happen this weekend.
I think the obvious choice would be to put a Mercedes 1-2. You know, they've been massively reliable. There is also, as we just said, the outside chance that they might not be. But they've been massively reliable over the winter. When they've pushed, they've been super quick. It'd be silly to, if you were a gambling man or woman, to put your money anywhere else other than Mercedes. Yeah.
The big question is, who's going to come third? and I'm sticking my neck out with this, and I'm saying I think it's going to be Kimi.
Kimi Räikkönen. That would be an interesting one with Kimi Räikkönen. I think Daniel Ricciardo might have, you know, home fans and a home advantage in the disappointment of losing out last year. I'm going to say Daniel Ricciardo purely on that, even though the Red Bull is not at the stage we think it is.
Just to be the first Australian to get on the podium in the Australian Grand Prix.
Yes, because he cruelly had that taken away from him last year.
Who else is going to do what? I think McLaren, we'll see them starting from the pit lane.
And I think Kevin Magnussen might do better than expected. He did very well at this race last year.
It was his moment, actually, that, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it you could argue his season went downhill from there.
He's got the opportunity to do better this year, purely and simply because the pressure's not on him.
Yeah.
Because he knows that's not his seat. Mm-hmm. As far as we know at the moment, Fernando is coming back.
Yeah.
He's got one shot at the moment to do whatever he can. Show that he's a team guy, because they've kept him on as the third driver when he was expected to be number two this season.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a good race. You can't rule Jensen out of doing well, because Jensen always seems to get the best out of a good car. Especially in Australia.
Yeah.
But whether McLaren getting the points or not, it's down to the car, and that is a complete unknown quantity.
I think Jensen will score a point. I think he'll scrape a point on the somewhere
at the back end. It's quite plain and simple. Manor, if they finish the race, will be towards the beam. That if they finish the race, that's a miracle. However many laps down they are on anyone else, you'll see Manor at the back, and I actually think you might see McLaren and Force India actually not too far ahead of them. And possibly Toro Rosso. I think Lotus and Sauber will be massively improved at the head of the midfield, and then, you know, point scoring among Williams, Ferrari and Red Bull and whoever else might want to get involved.
Mercedes out front.
I think Rosberg is going to surprise Lewis this weekend. I think Rosberg is going to be on pole, and I think he's going to be really quick in the race. I'm doing it right. I know it shouldn't surprise Lewis.
Yeah,
but I think with the momentum Lewis has got going into this race, I think it will surprise him if he's not on the front. You know, if he's not heading the pack in Australia, and I think they'll come together at the first race.
That's always a possibility we haven't spoken about, because of course Mercedes did have that coming together in Belgium, mm-hmm. where Rosberg clipped Hamilton's rear wheel. Toto Wolff became very displeased. It was unbelievable, according to him, after the race. but they've never to this point taken each other out of a race.
No.
I don't know if
both cars will come together and not finish, but I do. I think there's going to be something there, because don't forget there's always two
equally fast cars and two equally fast drivers fighting for the same bit of track.
Yeah.
There's always a good chance which one of them's going to blink first.
But there's always an incident at the first corner of the first race.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it Murray used to call it? Back to school time again.
Yeah. But the thing is, you've got they've been through last year where they were fighting each other, you know, all the way through, and they had some battles, and there was some really clean racing going on there. There was one real one, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But do you think that there might be a bit of a familiarity breeds contempt, where they feel now, because they've done it once, they feel they can go at it again? And usually when things like that, you go a step harder.
It's a new start almost. Yeah.
I think they're under strict instructions not to do anything like that, just like they're under strict instructions to be friends again.
Yeah.
Just like two primary school kids that have had a bust up in the playground, mm-hmm. teacher makes them shake hands.
Yeah, possibly, but I mean, Rosberg did everything he could when the championship was going away from him at that last race of last season. Mercedes asked him if he wanted to stop the car, and he said, no thanks, I'd rather go to the end, even though he was losing places. I think he finished 14th in the end, with a car that was 160 horsepower down on what it should have been. And then at the end of the race, he went upstairs to the winner's enclosure and found Lewis Hamilton. So congratulations, well done. Shook his hand, gave him a hug. I mean, you can't say any more about Rosberg than that.
No,
I've never seen Lewis Hamilton do that ever to anyone.
If it was the other way around and Rosberg won World Championship,
wouldn't have done that.
He wouldn't have done it.
I don't think he would have done. And that's not to say that Lewis is unsporting, but I think Rosberg is more sporting.
Yeah.
He's a different type of individual.
Takes Lewis longer to come down from his focus.
Yes.
Shall we say?
Yes, I think so.
Because when Lewis is behind the wheel, he is very, very focused.
Yes.
So it's going to be an interesting weekend. It all starts Thursday night, early hours of Friday morning our time.
Yes.
So, well, my alarm isn't set because I think I'll just be staying up. I'll be completely blurry-eyed this weekend, as will most of us.
Yes.
Don't forget to check back on the site because, Chris, you'll be writing your regular preview for threelegsfourwheels.com.
Yeah, I'll do a little preview, yeah, so keep an eye out for that.
And, of course, as we started last season, we'll be live blogging the race as it happens.
Absolutely. So if you're out and about, you can catch up on your mobile, or if you're on your desktop PC or laptop, just log on and see what's happening.
And we'll be back to do another one of these next week, and we'll have plenty of things to talk about with what's gone on over the weekend, no doubt. So until next time, we'll see you soon.
Goodbye. Bye.